Sergei regarded Anya as she maintained her distance from him.
Where is it?
I already told you I don't have it. Can't give you what I don't have. Wouldn't give it to you if I did have it.
I thought my warning was clear.
Crystal. But I can't give you what I don't have. Get that into your thick skull.
Speaking of skulls, have you learned more about what you claim not to have?
If I had, I wouldn't tell you.
So why did you come today, Anya?
To talk to you. To figure you out.
She hooked her hands at her hips, pacing back and forth. She was aware of his every movement, her body ready to dash, either into the fray or away from it. He sensed she was more than a mere researcher who spent her days digging in the dirt. Yet he couldn't figure out what experience on television could have taught her about self-defense or the fighting skills she'd used against him yesterday. She was a well-rounded woman, smart and capable of protecting herself. Unlike his family, they would never see it coming when the reality of Benjamin Ravenscroft came for them. He had to settle this matter and get the skull before Ben did.
Is figuring me out so important?
I'm a curious kind of girl, Sergei. A guy breaks into my loft, then stabs me with some funky tool, and it makes me wonder, you know?
How is the wrist?
She stopped pacing. He saw the tiny wince she made at mention of the wound. It satisfied him. He was still in control.
What the hell kind of weapon was that? You punched a hole through me.
A specialty item, necessary to my trade.
Let's quit with the banter. Why do you want the skull? And what is it exactly?
So you have no clue. Good. It's not information you require, Anya. As for why I want it, will you accept it means more to me than it ever could to you?
I'm an archaeologist. Old bones are like gold to us. And puzzling out their origins are the platinum sprinkles on top. If you're not going to help me, then I can't help you. Did you have anything to do with Marcus Cook getting shot?
The thief Ben had hired to obtain the skull. Sergei had tracked him from the moment he'd landed in New York. If a man thought to control him by threatening his family, then Sergei made sure to keep a keen eye on that man. There wasn't a move Ben made without Sergei knowing about it. Mostly, he knew things like where Ravenscroft took his secretary for an after-work rendezvous, or at what clubs he entertained high-roller clients. Material bullshit. But when Ben had returned from a trip to Venice and had gone to the Cloisters, a medieval museum in Manhattan, Sergei had followed. He'd overheard Ben asking a curator about Sidon and a mythical skull rumored to be giver of all good things.
I can honestly say I don't know the man. The thief, that is.
But you knew the sniper?
Again? No. That surprised me, I must say. If someone was after the skull, why shoot the man carrying it and risk losing it?
That's what I can't figure out either. So, why were you there? How did you know Marcus had the skull, and who else is after it?
I thought I was the one asking the questions.
My bad. Looks like you hauled your ass all the way out here for nothing. Any family members you need to say hello to?
You do remember my threat, don't you, Anya?
I'm not much for threats. They're mostly hot air. Besides, if you've heard one threat, you've heard them all. And trust me, I get them a lot.
I sense that you do. Not the most agreeable woman, are you?
Sergei kept a bowie knife tucked inside his coat, in a leather sheath right next to the bone biopsy tool. He did not draw it out. This time, he wanted to see what she could do without weapons. She hadn't brought a sword. It would be fist to fist. Or rather, fist to air, as his opponent dodged his first strike.
What's with you in beating on women, Sergei?
Light on her feet, she dodged another punch. Her counterattack connected with his jaw, but it wasn't hard enough to make his head jerk.
Violence is gauche. I would never harm a woman unless she disobeyed a direct request.
Is that so? But taking core samples from people is all right with you?
As a matter of fact, it is.
Anya kicked out. Sergei blocked with one arm and grabbed her ankle with the other. Anya landed, forearms and knees on the snow, but she was quick. Her other boot connected with his knee. He teetered. The woman landed on his chest. He clapped a hand about hers and kneed her in the gut. She spilled sideways and rolled across the snowy grass. The open grave lay nearby. She didn't move. Sergei moved closer. A face full of snow temporarily blinded him. A heavy rubber heel to the base of his spine stung and prickled through his extremities. Sergei clotheslined her across the back of her shoulders, then lunged and gripped one of her ankles. A hard heel crushed the side of his face. She went down, but gripped the front of his coat. He rolled over her, clasping her in an embrace as he did. Her face landed in the snow. Jumping to his feet, Sergei palmed the bowie knife. Anya rolled to her back. Sergei hated to see her brought to her knees when he was sure she didn't have the skull. She must have handed it off to someone or hidden it, and he wouldn't be able to follow a dead woman. So he'd end this, but not completely. Anya pushed onto her hands and jumped to stand. A fist to her sternum, right above the center of her breasts, put her back, wobbling. Sergei landed punches to her throat, her shoulder, and her jaw. She lost balance and fell forward into the grave. Working quickly, Sergei kicked the dirt over her inert body.
Sweet dreams, Anya Kreet.
While her mind grew heavy and her lungs took on the dirt's muffling weight, Anya struggled with the idiotic situation. She'd let the man get the better of her again, and now he would bury her alive.
Why didn't I draw the sword?
The thought to do so had tickled her brain, and then Sergei had smashed it with his fist. She'd landed face down. The hard dirt froze against her flesh. Dirt crumbled on her tongue. Her chest ached from the forceful punch. The earth was icy cold, and numbness already thickened her fingers. The thought of worms crept into her consciousness. They were about the only thing that could make her leave a dig and wander off for a deep breath. Fingers curling, she clawed into the cold earth. The numbness reduced her efforts to futile movements. Lifting an elbow backward to drag through the dirt was difficult. There was little give.
Stop panicking.
If her breathing accelerated, she'd use all her air. To release her next breath slowly and concentrate on the careful movement of her fingers as they worked through the earth brought sudden calm. Almost zen, she stretched out a finger and curled it. Her next intake didn't enter her burning lungs. Stretching an arm, she thought she felt the dirt loosen. And then she felt nothing. She'd broken through. The sheer joy of feeling the cold air on her palm ratcheted her anxiety. When a hand slapped into hers and formed a tight grip, she was too happy to be fearful. She'd hug the bastard and then give him a taste of 3 feet of cold hard steel. Pulled from an early grave, the dirt sucked at her limbs, wanting to pull her back, but relenting. When she was able, Anya towed the grave's edge and stepped up. The hand released her. She wobbled and her muscles gave way. Dropping, she landed in a graceless but sitting sprawl. Slapping away the dirt from her clothing, she sensed she'd find dirt in strange places later when showering. Almost as an afterthought, she looked up at her rescuer.
Ah, crap.
Garin Braden stood 6 feet wow, with broad shoulders and a long black leather duster coat. A finely trimmed mustache edged his mouth and connected to a dark goatee. Looking like some kind of devil's bounty hunter, he grinned slyly at her.
Anya Kreet, I do believe you are in over your head this time. Quite literally, it would appear.
Yeah? When have I not been in over my head? It's what I do.
You have no idea who you are involved with, Anya. Ben Ravenscroft doesn't like to lose, nor does the man who just buried you.
Do tell. That guy must have been a real treat in the sandbox when he was a kid. Ben Ravenscroft.
You don't know about him?
Sergei mentioned the name Benjamin. I have a feeling you know everything I want to know. Which always seems to be the case with you and me. Why is that?
Come with me.
Anya followed his gaze across the cemetery. A black limo idled on the street outside the fence. She glanced at Garin. Not a nice man. She did not trust him, yet on occasion she relied upon him. Or rather, took the assistance he offered because it was either that or be abandoned on a remote island or left behind to flee machine gun fire. When he was not making her life miserable, he was pulling the rug out from under her with surprising acts of kindness.
Thanks, but I think I'll walk.
She strode across the snow-dusted grass, feeling her shaky legs protest.
You can't go home, Anya. Sergei has already been there. It's not safe.
Then I'll go to a hotel. City's full of them.
Let me put you up for a few days. I might be able to fill in some missing information.
At what price?
Anya, dearest.
Oh, please. You know damn well that I know damn well that the only reason you're ever nice to me is because you want something. You want the skull?
You don't have it, so that's not going to help me much.
Have you been following me?
I never reveal my methods.
Yeah, well, thanks for the rescue, but I'll see you later.
He had been following her. He did it often. The man had ways of tracking a person even she couldn't comprehend. Anya stepped off the curb behind the limo and her ankle twisted. Slapping the trunk as she went down, her palms didn't meet the rough, wet tarmac. Garin lifted her with one arm around her gut and swung her to stand against the trunk.
You'll never make it home on foot. And I know for a fact Ravenscroft has a man watching your loft.
I don't even know this Ravenscroft guy. Is he the sniper?
Sniper? No. Stop being so stubborn, Anya. All right, so you don't trust me? My apartment in Manhattan is large. The guest room is at one end. You don't even have to see me if you don't want to.
This is just wrong.
You can call your protector Rue.
I don't need Rue's help, and I don't need yours.
But you do need a shower. What's this?
He plucked something from her hair, and Anya closed her eyes.
Not a worm, please, not a worm.
He tossed the find over his shoulder.
Was it a worm?
I'll never tell. Come, take a ride with the devil, if you dare.
If he was right, and a man was watching her loft, she couldn't risk returning. If Benjamin Ravenscroft wasn't the sniper, that added yet another player to the game, and she'd lost count. Maybe a call to Rue was necessary. Not to ask him to come to her rescue, but to feel him out, see if he knew what Garin was up to. Because the man never appeared in her life by accident.
You know about the skull?
I may. We'll talk after I've made you comfortable, yes?
Anya was desperate for a hot shower. Neediness reared its ugly head. Anya crawled into the back seat and slid across to the far door. Garin reached in to brush away the dirt left in her wake before joining her.
Block my calls for the next hour, Rebecca.
Ben swiveled on his chair and pressed the button on his desk that brought up the computer screen and pushed out the slim keyboard drawer to a perfect height for typing. On his desk was the sniper's photo of Anya Creed and the notes Ben had taken from the television show the previous night. He had the phone number for the television studio, but he decided to surf the internet before calling and thus having to make up a story about wanting info on Creed. At the website for Chasing History's Monsters, he found a short bio on Anya Creed that emphasized the episodes she'd hosted regarding mythical creatures and legends. The bio downplayed her archaeological background.
Idiots.
It was obvious they felt the buxom Christy Chatham was the real cash cow, and they thought they'd add a little scholarly realism once in a while with that other chick. Ben tapped the tracking pad. There was no eulogy, no memorial. That meant she was still alive. Most television shows would certainly capitalize on the death of one of their stars, or at the very least issue a statement regarding their sympathies to her family. He scanned the show's masthead. Doug Morrell was listed as the producer. It boasted a skeleton crew for a show that looked pretty slick. They didn't post a phone number, but Ben highlighted and copied the email contact information. He knew they wouldn't give out Miss Creed's address to an anonymous caller.
But an elite businessman with a proposal for a show idea featuring her.
Ben pondered what he could push as an idea, but his mind didn't function beyond stock market figures and the patent craze in Dubai and the current need to find that damned skull. Opening a new window, he searched Creed's name, and it produced page after page of snippets from online chat room discussions. A quick glance determined all were archaeology sites. Then he spotted something unusual. a site called Celebrity Skin was advertising exclusive nude pictures of Creed. He'd check that one later. Clicking through the archaeology forums proved tedious. He realized it was possible Marcus Cook had contacted her through a chat room. It was stupid. Nothing online was secure, but still possible. He scanned pages of chatter about pottery shards and gold coins. There were kudos to Miss Creed for surviving a tsunami during a dig in southern India, and a few others wished to convince her that her excursion to Transylvania had damaged her credibility. Creed hadn't replied to those. The Amazon rainforest, the jungles of Southeast Asia, Siberia, Paris, Texas, China. The woman did have adventures. Ben wondered how the hell she had gotten tangled up with the Skull of Sidon. The owner had kept its whereabouts quiet for decades, centuries even. For that matter, Ben couldn't fathom how Sergei had discovered he had arranged to steal the thing. Someone was putting information out into the public arena. His thoughts averted by the disturbing idea, Ben typed in the name Maxfield Wisdom. It produced two hits. One for a used car salesman in Toledo, Ohio. The other was a small who's who bio on the man he knew. They named Wisdom as an avid collector of eclectic ephemera from around the world, an enthusiastic philanthropist, never married, but always looking. He once garnered an entry in the record books for the most gumballs chewed at one time. Ben didn't recall Wisdom as being so eccentric, just passionate about the oddities he'd secured for his collection. He bought everything online, of course. The man was not a world traveler due to an extreme dislike for air travel. The bio did not mention the skull, but of course it should not. Ben twisted the chair to gaze out the window. Snow fell heavily.
Sergei knows things normal people cannot dream of knowing. He has connections to a world we cannot imagine.
It was the very reason Ben had hired the man. The first time they'd met, Sergei had pinpointed Ben's need to obtain nothing. The man didn't know what that meant, only that it was what the spirits offered to him. With that, Ben knew the man was for real. Ben had seen opportunity. He was the man who believed in things one could not see or touch. He'd made a good living buying and selling just such things. Embracing Sergei's talents had come easily. And he'd been rewarded for his beliefs. It was possible to learn the future through spiritual contact. Ben had no idea how it worked, only that it did. But at the moment, Sergei landed second on Ben's list of persons of interest. His mole in the NYPD had reported there was nothing more than clothing and a roll of sodden 20s on Marcus Cook when his body had been dredged from the canal. No skull. Ben decided Anya Creed must have the skull. What would an intrepid young archaeologist do with a skull like that? Obviously, bones and stuff were her thing. Could she know what she held? Marcus hadn't been told what it was, so he could not have clued her in. So then, Ben thought, she must be curious about it. She'd probably search online for information about it. Likely try to date it. She couldn't have any fancy equipment herself.
The university?
Turning back to his computer, he reread the bio on the television show website. He scanned her academic credentials. She'd spent a summer at Columbia.
Bingo.
I didn't know you had a place in New York.
Garin tapped out the entrance code on a digital pad beside the door.
I do now. With real estate at such a delicious low, how could I resist? I do love to catch a Broadway show now and then.
Anya couldn't help but grin. Wonders never did cease.
I'd give you the official enter freely and of your own will, but I suspect you'd reserve that statement for me.
He had that one right. She never found vampires on her trip to Transylvania. Maybe because the closest thing to one stood right before her. Immortal and hungry for blood, be it racing or spilled. Anya entered the 30th floor Manhattan apartment with reluctance. She peeked around the corner as she entered the foyer, expecting to see a half-clad nymph scrambling away like a blood-drained Renfield into the shadows. The few times Garin had called her, she'd heard feminine giggles in the background. Gentleman, he may be, but he wasn't discriminating by any means.
There are no booby traps.
Just want to steer clear from the giggle brigade.
It's just you and me, Anya. I would never be so rude to impose on your presence by including another woman.
I'm honored.
You're being snarky.
A brush of her palm still sifted dirt from her jacket. It landed on the polished hardwood floor.
Yeah, well, where's that shower?
Down the hall and left is the guest room. Let me take a look at you first. Those clothes are too filthy.
He drew his dark gaze up and down her body. Her coat was unzipped, and he lingered at her breasts, which should have offended, but it was just so Garin.
You're still a size 6, I'd guess.
You going shopping?
Anya, please. I have people who do that for me.
She rolled her eyes and started down the hallway. The man was tall, dark, and too knowing for her own good. He'd once before arranged to have her dressed by some high-fashion name she couldn't recall. With a reluctant nod, Anya had to admit the dress had rocked. It made her look and feel sexy. Not something she felt when mucking about on a dig or swimming through toxic canals. That had also been the time Garin had kissed her. She would maintain vigilance this time. Wrists crossed upon his lap, Sergei knelt within the circle on the bare cement floor. The circle had been painted with tar. It was wide enough for him to kneel comfortably and to work the bone powder on the floor before him. He wore a black linen coat over his shirt. The coat was not his, and it gave off a musty odor. It was once worn by the man he now conjured to help him, one of his closest spirit contacts. It was important to wear a piece of the dead subject's clothing to open the connections. He'd crushed the bone sample taken from Anya Creed in a mortar and had placed half in a vial for later use. Sergei slipped a slim silver lighter from the coat pocket. Holding the flame low over the bone fragments, he moved it to singe the particles. Whiffs of smoke rose but did not take to flame. Unnecessary. The scent of burned bone wavered through his nostrils. Sweet, always, a scent he'd grown up with. It had been a serendipitous accident that night. His father had been burning some old junk found in the field. Unearthed clothing, half a wagon wheel, and a human leg bone. Sergei had inhaled the smoke, and the next moment had felt the presence within him. He'd been occupied by something not himself. Yet he'd been calm, leery to tell his father about it. The spirit had whispered of a lynching and his death. He'd left Sergei with the idea he could learn anything he wished by contacting the dead. Sergei's very soul spoke to the dead. After mentioning the experience to his mother, she'd brought out an old ring her deceased mother had worn. Sergei hadn't been able to contact his grandmother. He needed the bones, the visceral evidence of what was once life. Now, after years of training, he only needed an item the spirit had once worn or treasured. But still he needed bone if he wished to summon regarding a living being. He bowed his head low, moving his forehead to his wrists. Closing his eyes, pushed away all unnecessary thoughts from his mind. There were a few particular spirits he worked with often. They treaded the edges of his reality, willing and oftentimes curious to communicate with the corporeal realm. Alone in this room behind his bedroom, Sergei touched the greater all. It emerged swiftly and filled his being with presence. It tasted the burned bone and assumed the constitution of the bone's owner. Moving throughout Sergei's body, the all gave him glimpses, for that is what he mentally asked to know. Glimpses from her eyes. The familiar walls of a loft Sergei had only yesterday trashed. The screen of a laptop, scanning through text. and the photos of a skull he had found with his own search online. Snowflakes dusted her forearms. She walked briskly. A huge building stretched before her. She stood inside. The face of a man with curly hair smiled. He accepted the skull and... the images faded. They all left him. It gave only what he asked, and left with a painful tug to his soul. Sergei slapped his palms on the floor as his body shuddered back to the present. He would remain in this position for a few minutes until all was as it had been before the summoning. His heartbeat slowed. But his thoughts raced. The building had looked like a school of sorts, some kind of college, an archaeological center here in the city, perhaps. A university, he decided, somewhere in Manhattan. Anya strode out from the guest bathroom. Vanilla-scented steam wafted behind her. From what she'd seen of the place so far, it was all done in gray slate tiles and gray walls with brushed steel accents and black marble. Ultra macho. She liked it. No lace or frills for this chick. A large red department store box sat on the high king-size bed. Tugging her towel tightly about her chest, she checked the bedroom doors. Closed. The curtains, bunched to either side of the window, did not hide any lurking forms.
You never used to be so paranoid.
With the gift of Joan's sword had also come many a curse. And just plain suspicion. The closet door was still open from when she'd entered, and had done a cursory search of the room. The balcony doors were also latched. Anya slid onto the bed and ran a hand over the glossy box.
If there's silk or some kind of lacy stuff in here, I'm gonna stuff it down his throat.
The only occasions that would see her close to dressed up were better forgotten, as far as she was concerned. High heels and nylons were not on Anya Creed's radar. And yet, one of the few times she had been wearing just that had found her dancing the tango in Garin's arms and accepting his kiss. It was ironic, the situations they found themselves in.
That man has a way about him. A way I don't like.
On the other hand, that way did challenge her every time she came up against it. And she never walked away from a good challenge. Inside, a folded pair of khaki pants and long-sleeved turquoise shirt sat neatly folded. Beneath the pants, a slip of black lace revealed itself. Anya tugged out the bra and read the tag.
The man knows lingerie, I'll give him that.
After dressing and combing her wet hair into a ponytail, Anya padded barefoot down the marble hallway in search of the kitchen. She wasn't above rooting about for sustenance. Though she'd gargled plenty of water in the shower, the taste of earth still lingered in her throat. The lack of food in the huge stainless steel refrigerator didn't surprise her. Garin ate most meals at fine restaurants, with the requisite sexy lady by his side. And when at home, he probably ordered in. Evian water was stocked, as well as vodka and pomegranate juice. A carton of eggs and half a dozen bright red apples sat beside a 9mm Sig Sauer P250. Anya smirked at the storage place. She supposed it was necessary for a man like Garin. One could never be too careful of the strangers one allowed into their bed. She might be packing, a spy sent by an enemy to take him down. Rolling her eyes at the thought, Anya helped herself to a curvy bottle of pomegranate juice. Twisting open the plastic lid, she closed the refrigerator door.
Make yourself at home.
Garin stood where the open door had been. Arms crossed high on his chest, he smirked and delivered that patented full body once over he did so well. The heat rose in Anya's cheeks.
I guess right on the sizes, I see.
Anya slid onto a high stool before the stainless steel freestanding counter.
You've had plenty of practice.
I have. But if you've followed women's fashion through the ages, you'd be startled to know what passes as a size 6 today didn't exist decades ago. Every year, the manufacturers make the sizes fit a smaller woman. You'd think if they wanted to sell out, they'd make a size 12 a 10.
Male logic at its finest. So, no food?
If you're hungry, I'll order in. What's your pleasure? Chinese? Thai? Tapas?
Actually, I could go for a burger.
Anya, all that saturated fat.
Oh, look at you, Mr. Health Conscious. Didn't think it would matter for a man who's immortal.
As far as we know.
Anya looked at him carefully. The man didn't look as if he'd aged much since the sword had become whole, and hers. Of course, she had never noticed those fine creases at the corners of his eyes before.
You thinking about investing in Botox, big boy?
Now that you bring it up, how is the sword treating you? Keeping you from danger? From falling into coffin-sized holes?
It's there when I need it. There have been a few times I've wanted it, though, and maybe for lack of space, it wouldn't come to my grip.
Interesting. So it only appears when possible. Gotta watch those empty graves, Anya.
Yeah, so rub it in. Haven't I done you enough favors to earn amnesty from your sarcasm?
Well, if you're keeping score, you'll be disappointed to know I've racked up more brownie points than you have. But I don't keep score. That's so gauche.
She was fairly certain that when the indignities she had suffered for the man's favor were measured against the times he'd helped her, she would come out ahead. But Garin was right. Keeping score was gauche. But she'd take the points when she could.
Let's talk business. You know about the skull and Sergei. And Benjamin Ravenscroft is a name I've heard but know nothing about.
Let's chat in the living room.
She followed him into the long main room, which was lined with windows that looked out over Central Park. Snowflakes peppered the gray sky. They were supposed to get 2 inches of fresh snow. The brown leather furniture didn't overwhelm the large room. Huge ferns and a plant with a bright red flower gave it a tropical touch. Anya chose a chair because she didn't want to share the couch with Garin. She couldn't afford to let down her guard. Settling onto the chair, she tugged her legs to her body and conformed to the hug of the supple leather. She felt very relaxed and too comfortable. Garin reclined on the couch, legs spread and arms stretched across the back. His crisp white business shirt and black trousers gave him an undeniably sexual aura. Though his features were rugged, not quite handsome, she bet most women did a double take when this man walked by.
So the skull. Tell me everything you know. And did you know about the thief?
The guy you met at the bridge?
Were you there too?
Not at the bridge, specifically.
In the area? How many people know about this?
I heard about the drowned man the next morning, and sometimes it's very easy to put two and two together and come up with Anya Creed.
His easy smile kept her from tightening a fist on her lap.
The skull.
I've seen it once before, in the 15th century, a few years before the execution.
So the two of you were mortal at the time?
Yes. Rue and I were on our way to France to meet the Maid of Orléans. We stopped by a Moorish palace in Granada. I think it was the Alhambra.
That's a famous palace.
Yes, isn't it? I held the skull while Rue talked to an alchemist.
How can you know it's the same skull I've seen?
As far as skulls go, it is unique.
Describe it to me.
Small, likely belonged to an infant. Silver lines the divides between the bones.
They're called sutures.
Oh? I'm not up on skull terminology. Sound like the one you've held?
Not really. So you just let it get out of your hands, then?
I had no idea what it was. Thought it was just another trinket, though I believed I heard it whisper to me. The alchemist was convinced it was the skull of Sidon.
The skull of Sidon?
A legend the great archaeologist doesn't know about?
Is it Templar-related?
Points for you. Yes, it is. How did you guess?
There was a small cross patee on the gold edging the sutures. But it's so obvious a symbol. I thought it might be Teutonic.
There's gold on it. There was silver on it in the 15th century.
So you've got the wrong skull.
Or you do.
Anya knew that artifacts were tampered with all the time. And if the skull had not been buried for centuries, whoever might have owned it over the years could have embellished it. Perhaps the original silver had worn away or been taken out and melted down for sale.
The gold could have been added later. Hell, the alchemist might have put it on. He prized that skull and felt it gave him great success, although he didn't have it to hand after we left.
Who was the alchemist?
Alfonso de Castagna.
Never heard of him.
Nor had you heard of the Skull of Sidon.
Touché.
Does it have the markings on the interior?
She balked at giving the answer, but he read her reluctance.
They appear as though they were there originally, yes?
Yes. They don't look carved, but it's ridiculous to believe they were born into the skull, as Professor Danziger has suggested.
Ridiculous, but not impossible. Especially if you look at the skull's origins. It's all very macabre and taboo.
Sounds like 90% of my work. I love the taboo stuff. But the Skull of Sidon, I don't know the history.
Then get comfortable, Anya. Let me tell you how the Skull of Sidon came to be. The Knights Templar, as you know, were formed after the First Crusade to police the high roads and keep the pilgrims traveling to Jerusalem safe from thieves and cutthroats. They took vows of chastity, poverty, piety, and obedience.
The cross on their robes, didn't that symbolize martyrdom?
Yes, and to die in combat was considered a great honor, a sure trip to heaven. They never surrendered in battle unless all the Templar flags had fallen. They were a fearsome force in their day.
Medieval, 12th and 13th century.
Yes, the Templars fell in the 14th. Accusations of blasphemy and heresy led to their demise. They were accused of trampling and spitting on the cross, engaging in vile sexual practices such as homosexuality and head-worshipping. Their doomsday happened on Friday the 13th.
Really? Here, I thought that was Jason's day. I thought I'd heard everything about the Templars, what with all the Da Vinci Code and Grail stuff in the media.
Now, there is much on the Knights, true, but the Skull of Sidon is often overlooked by scholars as mere myth.
Garin leaned forward from where he sat on the couch, splaying his long, tanned fingers before him as he explained.
There was a Templar knight in love with a lady from Maraclea.
Clear waters. Isn't that what Maraclea means?
Yes, or simply sea. And then there are some scholars who will claim it means something like greater shining, an allusion to the Holy Grail, which makes the tale more interesting than not. The knight was actually a lord of Sidon, rumored to not only be a Templar, but also a pirate. Sidon was rife with pirates at the time. The city was crawling with them. Anyway, because of his vows, the knight could not consummate his relationship with the Maraclean lady. But after her untimely death, all vows were null, or so he decided.
Oh, don't tell me.
He exhumed her corpse and, well, let's say he had his way with it. Those of a certain mind would have the knight coming into the greater shining, actually gaining the Grail, this means of enlightenment, through that copulation.
Seriously?
It's a theory, Anya. So after the macabre act, it is said the knight heard a voice telling him to return to the grave in 9 months, which he did.
Because one always obeys disembodied voices after committing necrophilia.
Naturally. Upon returning, the knight found the skull placed above the woman's crossed leg bones, which some believe is the origin for the skull and crossbones symbol. And if he really was a pirate, then all the more basis for the belief. Anyway, the knight took the skull, and again the voice spoke. It told him to guard it well, because it would be the giver of all good things to him, become his protecting genius. That is also what the Holy Grail is supposed to do, be the giver of all good things.
Yes, I've heard that. So he left with the skull and...
When he wielded it in battle, his enemies were destroyed. His protecting genius granted him all good things, or so the story goes.
Anya waited to see if he would continue. Garin rubbed his chin, eyeing her intently.
You're kidding me, right? Oh, I mean, please. A skull born of a necrophilic liaison?
He stretched his arms across the couch back and propped an ankle across his knee.
Anya Creed, bearer of a magical sword that appears out of nowhere at her beckon, does not believe my tale of a magical skull.
I believe what I can see, touch, and hear. Giver of all good things. The skull didn't do anything particularly good when I had it. In fact, it brought a nasty bad guy to my doorstep who proceeded to tear apart my home. He destroyed some irreplaceable research books.
Better a book than you.
Anya curled her fingers about her bandaged wrist. The long sleeve hid the bandages, but Garin noticed.
So that's why you want it? You need good things? What that money can't buy do you need?
I didn't say I wanted the skull.
You don't have to. You never show up to help me without an ulterior motive.
Anya, you cut me.
Doubtful. That ego of yours is ironclad.
It is merely I feel you are out of your league. You don't know the maelstrom you've stepped into. You think the bone conjurer won't stalk you until your feet are bloody and you offer your own skull to get him off your back?
Bone conjurer? I've heard the term before. Is that what Sergei is? And how do you know him?
I don't know him personally, but I've heard of him, or rather his kind. Bone conjurer is an ancient term, used since biblical times. He's a necromancer. One who summons the dead, can communicate with spirits, manipulate and redirect common mortals by utilizing revenants. Much like a modern-day medium. The term is old world.
Peachy. I haven't had any adventures with the dead lately.
Anya, you must take this seriously. I believe in the immense power the man holds. The necromancer can manipulate the dead to great means.
So what good is a centuries-old skull to him?
I can only imagine it is a necromancer's grail. And let's just forget about the connotations to the real grail legend.
Hallelujah. There are so many it's become comical.
The skull of Sidon, born of a necrophilic encounter, will no doubt serve a necromantic master incredible evils.
I thought it gave good things.
Yes, but your perception of good may be completely opposite of what someone like Sergei believes to be good. Good to him may be unspeakable to you and me.
Anything unspeakable to Garin was definitely not good. Anya had seen a lot since taking Joan's sword to hand. Demons, murderers, twisted scientists intent on cloning history's monsters, even those who would create Frankenstein's monster.
I still don't buy it. Skeletons don't give birth to skulls.
It is said the birth was most grisly.
Wonder if she asked for an epidural.
Skeptic.
To the bone.
She rubbed her wrist again. A bone conjurer had a sample of her bone. That could not be good.
But I'm willing to do some research. You got a laptop I can borrow?
I do. I wouldn't expect you to take my word for what it's worth.
It's worth a trick, if you ask me. And I'm so not buying you not having an interest in the thing. Worried about little old me? Last time I believe you wanted to help me, I ended up dodging machine gun fire.
That was an oversight, Anya. Listen, I'm hungry. I'm going to order Thai. You have any requests?
No, just hook me up with a laptop and feed me anything. I'm good.
It's down the hall, in my office. Second door on the right.
Closing the office door behind her, Anya surveyed the ultra-slick room. Everything was stainless steel and tempered glass. Nice, but cold. She had Garin figured for a more earthy type of guy. Then again, he did like to toss around cash as if it was confetti. Anya inspected the glass desktop. Just the laptop. She checked behind the curtains and roamed her eyes along the ceiling. No security cameras. She flexed her fingers and sat before the desk, pulling open the top drawer. It contained the usual office ephemera. No important papers.
Something important may still be out in the open.
The computer was booted up. Chancing the look, Anya checked the browser's history. It listed websites Garin had visited for the past week. eBay, Amazon, her show's site, and a few archaeology sites she recognized.
So he has been following me.
None of the sites offered a solid clue to the man's motives. She slipped her cell phone from a pocket on the pants Garin had bought her. Rue's number was on speed dial. Calling him was as precarious as walking into Garin's home. One never knew who would answer.
Hello?
Rue and Garin were two of an old and distinct kind. They may not use the term playboy, but it's the first word that came to her mind.
I'd like to talk to Rue.
Rue!
What must it be like for them to never age and have an entire world of women at their beck and call?
Dating for her was looking as precarious as the polar bear lately. If Anya didn't start paying attention to it, it was going to disappear altogether. But at the moment, extracurricular activity would have to take a back seat. She needed to figure out who was who and why they all wanted the skull. She should have asked Garin to tell her about Benjamin Ravenscroft.
Good evening, Anya. To what do I owe the pleasure?
Sorry to interrupt.
Nonsense. The girls are out enjoying the pool. So, what can I do for you?
I'm here at Garin's Manhattan apartment.
Did you call to joke with me, Anya? You shouldn't do that to an old man.
You may be old, but you've the attitude and physique of a 50-year-old.
50? Anya, you wound me.
He looked a nice, healthy 50, if truth were told. An attractive, healthy 50. Man, she did need to start dating if the two oldest men in the world turned her head so easily.
Garin pulled me out of a grave this morning as I was breathing my last breath.
Sporting of him. Why the sleep with the worms?
Anya flinched at the mention of worms. Garin had plucked one from her hair, she was sure of it.
I've found a new friend who wants to kill me if I don't hand over a fancy skull given to me by an anonymous, and now dead, thief.
Ah, adventure again. I do love to live vicariously through you, Anya. You may think I've lived a dangerous life, but you do defy even my best adventures. What's the skull about? I'm assuming Garin wants to get his hands on it?
That's my guess, but he's playing Mr. Nice Guy right now. Claims he wants to protect me from a necromancer. He called it the Skull of Sidon. I'm just sitting down to research it right now.
What?
You've heard of it?
Google brought up 10 pages of matches. The first flashed Knights Templar and the blurb, along with mention of the Lady of Maraclea.
Anya, Garin's right. I don't want you going near the necromancer. Those bastards are bad news.
Yeah? What about the skull?
The skull is bad news as well.
So, you believe in a skull born from a necrophilic liaison?
I do, but more so, I believe in the necromancer's power. And if you've got something he wants, he'll kill to get it. I take it he's the one who put you in the grave?
Yes. But I don't think he was trying to kill me. Just give me a scare. He has to keep me alive. I don't have the skull at the moment, and I'm the only one who knows where it is.
He'll find it.
I don't know how he can. I was very careful not to be followed.
If he's got something of yours, he can track you. A strand of hair, a piece of clothing.
She turned her wrist up, and the bandage sneaked below the sleeve hem.
What about a bone sample?
You're not serious.
We had a scuffle, and he had this sharp instrument that took a chunk out of my wrist like a core sample from a tree.
God damn it! Anya, bone is the necromancer's primary weapon. He can summon ghosts and all sorts of dark and twisted things with it.
It was rare for Rue to use foul language with her. Anya pushed the laptop aside. Garin stood in the doorway, listening. He filled the whole doorway with his wide shoulders and a stare so intense it could burn out her irises.
Did you tell Garin?
Anya tried to look away from Garin's gaze, but he had her locked in the crosshairs. She hadn't noticed him approach. He could have been listening to the whole conversation.
No, I don't think I told him.
Tell him. Oh, curse the gods. Let me talk to him.
Now that was an interesting request. Rue and Garin were at odds more often than allies. While their relationship was more father and son than anything else, they constantly proved to her they were more enemies than relatives. Certainly no common blood ran in their veins. Anya handed her cell phone toward the man occupying the doorway.
It's Rue.
Garin took the phone and, before speaking, narrowed his eyes at her. Nope, she wasn't going to give him a clue. She'd leave the verbal combat to the big boys.
Rue?
While the men spoke, Anya tapped on the keyboard, bringing up the first sight that featured a photo of a skeleton at a dig site. The leg bones were crossed, and a smaller skull sat at the hip bones. It was not an actual photo of the Maracleyan woman's remains, it warned, just a reenactment of the legend. That was the thing. Anya didn't know how to believe something so wild until she could trace it to the original dig. If Marcus Cook was still alive, he would have the answer to where the skull had last been. Rue was cooler than cool. He'd stood against bullets, RPGs, grenades, swords, and so much more, Anya felt sure, than to let one man scare him. Sure, Sergei was big, strong, and powerful. While he didn't seem to exercise any particular martial skills, he could no doubt snap her like a twig if he got her in the right hold. He might even give Garin a run for his money, physically. They were about the same height and build, but she knew Garin would not hesitate to kill in his own defense. Sergei, on the other hand, had not proven murderous. Yet. And if he did possess some supernatural power, wouldn't he have used it on her by now? Maybe his power wasn't like zapping lightning bolts out of his fingers. It had to be conjured. He could be working some mojo on her as she sat here. Typing in necromancy, Anya waited as Google searched. The trouble with the internet was you couldn't tell it you only wanted to search scholarly articles about any given request. The search brought up web page after web page about necromancers. All gaming sites.
Not what I want.
Garin set the cell phone on the glass desktop.
He has your bone sample?
Anya tugged up her sleeve to reveal the bandage.
I thought it was a freaky kind of weapon. It's healing fine, thank you very much. Though it still hurts like a mother.
Garin gripped a fist before him, then released it.
This is not good, Anya. With a piece of your bone, the conjurer can...
Can what?
I don't know specifics. Necromancers can do nasty, macabre stuff. It's not pretty. But I do know you're up Schitt's Creek. We've got to get the skull.
It's at the university with Professor Danziger. I left it for him to authenticate. What time is it?
9.
I'm sure he's left for the day.
We can't take the chance the skull will be left unattended. Let's go.
But Rue thinks I should stay out of this.
He swung to face her in the doorway.
You always do what Rue asks of you?
No. How will having the skull in hand protect me from Sergei? Won't it just draw him right to me?
It will keep him back. It is the giver of all good things. Trust me on this one, Anya.
Garin touched her chin with a finger and held her gaze. His eyes were intense.
You've witnessed the skull's power before, haven't you?
He made to leave, but she gripped his sleeve.
Tell me about it. Give me proof this skull is worth the worry.
Garin glanced over his shoulder toward the distant Alhambra Palace. It sat like a jewel perched atop the red hills. The setting sun glinted across the palace, catching glass and metal in a twinkle.
No time for dawdle, apprentice.
Rue reined his mount near Garin's and nodded north. They'd crossed the Daro River an hour earlier. It was a fine time for dawdling. The night moved upon them with a surprising chill. The goshawk circling above had left them for her nest, no doubt to settle for the night. Exhausted from the journey, Garin was ready to make camp. Ahead, a grove of trees edged a field of some crop he couldn't guess at, perhaps wheat. The trees would provide shelter for camp.
We will rest soon?
No.
His master reined closer, and Garin could see the old man's pale irises.
Listen.
Dropping his tight hold on the reins allowed the horse freedom to graze. Garin tilted his head, eyeing Rue as he listened. The old man held his gaze fiercely. Yes, he heard something. Rather, he felt vibrations touch his bones with a wicked warning.
They've been following since Granada. Sikhs or more, I'm sure.
Now the horses picked up the vibrations and lifted their heads. Ears twitched. They walked, heads bobbing, ready to gallop. Garin let his mount follow Rue's lead as he heeled his to action.
Why?
I may have something they want. Head for the trees. We can use them as defense.
Here we go again.
The old man did have a manner to him. He attracted a skirmish no matter where he traveled. It was good training for Garin, and he never minded a chase followed by the clash of swords. Wielding leather shields and helmets, six warriors entered the grove of almond trees full speed, swords to the ready.
Must be De Castagna's guards.
Why would he send men after us?
I may have forgotten to pay for this.
He drew out the small skull Garin had marveled over in the alchemist's lab. Garin drew out his saber.
Will it be worth it when our heads are on the ground, separated from our bodies?
There are about six of them, boy.
Healing his mount, Garin charged the vanguard. The first slash of his saber cut across the lead rider's face. Garin ducked to avoid the swing of a curved saber, then let his rouncy take the ground where it wished. A Moor's saber cut down his mount's neck. Slashing his blade, Garin cut off a hand. The horse's withers tensed. Garin sensed it would rear and try to shed him. Garin rolled to avoid a hoof and swung around with a wide lunge toward the rider gaining him. His blade cut across the leather shield. Swinging his shoulders, Garin used his free hand and hooked it in a stirrup. The rider was tossed from the saddle and landed on the hard red dirt.
Behind me, boy!
Garin pushed his blade into the fallen Moor's chest. Then he ran toward Rue's voice. More warriors, dozens, entered the grove. Garin crashed against Rue's side. Back to back, they held position in the night.
So many? For a skull?
Time to see if it will give us the good things it promises.
Garin had no idea what the old man babbled about.
Back toward the tree, and stay behind me.
Garin wasn't willing to put himself in a position to be surrounded by the enemy. But he was still alive after a dozen years with Rue. He trusted he had a good dozen more at the very least. This would not be his night to die.
Give us good things.
Rue held the skull before him with both hands high and as if an offering to the moon. Almond blossoms were unleashed from their tethers in a storm. Amidst a swirl of almond petals, riders fell from their mounts and landed on the ground, arms splayed. As if cut through the heart, their chests opened wide. The ground grew muddy from human blood. They did not rise and advance upon Rue and Garin. Gaping, Garin clung to the tree trunk. Another pulse blew the trees bare of blossoms. Garin clutched Rue's shoulders, but found he was neither toppled nor injured.
What is it? How is this happening?
I would call that good. This marvel just killed all our enemies.
It is evil.
Evil it may be, but it saved our Saliasses.
Rue strode past the bodies toward his Andalusian. He did not seem to take measure of the startling event that had just occurred. Mounting and tucking the skull at his hip, he nodded to a warrior's horse that had not been stripped of flesh or fled.
You've been wanting a new mount, boy.
Numbly, Garin grabbed the reins of a Moor's mount.
Good things. God in heaven, forgive and watch over me.
They made Medina Sidonia by sunrise. Garin could not think of sleep, for the itchy dust crowded his eyes, nostrils, and the back of his throat. He'd yet to take his gaze from the skull Rue held nestled at his hip. It had power, a power that frightened Garin. He'd seen wonders since Rue had taken him as an apprentice. Babies birthed and giants of men fallen, dying men cured with magic potions. And there was the man in London whose heart was exposed for all to see. Garin had seen a live heart beating. Last night had put all those wonders to shame. They cantered toward the village, which was just waking to the new day. Ahead were women busy at a stone well with their wash. They could forget about the battle in the grove. They would find food and rest and be on to France with no more discussion of the skull. The truth was, he wanted Rue to be rid of the thing. The occult scared him. A young boy, no higher than a grown man's hip, rushed out from a stone home and toward Rue. Arms wide and eyes bright, he could not know the approaching rider. Such childish innocence, it made Garin smile. The boy was lifted from his feet and flung through the air. His frail body collided with the red tile roof and slid, then fell to the ground. Garin heeled his mount to parallel his master.
What have you done? It is that damn thing.
I did not. It was not my doing.
Rue inspected the skull.
Garin!
The boy is dead by supernatural means. Be rid of the thing.
Rue turned the eye sockets away and lifted it high. The women gathered around the well stood.
Put it away! Destroy it!
Blood streamed across white fabric, spilling from ears and eyes. The women clutched at their hair and stumbled. Wash buckets overturned, washing the flowing blood into runnels of dirt.
Turn it away from them!
But the old man was too shocked to understand what was happening. The skull was destroying more than their enemies. It was taking away life in an attempt to clear their paths.
Dear God.
The room, very still, felt heavy with an ineffable pain. Garin's regret. His fear of the skull. Rue's naivete of its power.
It murders?
It does not seem to discern murder as wrong. It gives the holder what it believes to be good. Putting back our enemies, clearing a path through the village for us to pass.
What did you do with the skull? How did you stop it?
Rue tried to crush it under his boot. It was as though it had been forged from steel. Finally, I had him throw it down the well. It was too late for the laundresses and half a dozen strong men who rushed to stop us.
What did the villagers do to you?
We didn't stick around for the fireworks. While the village wondered at what had happened, we fled.
It occurred to Anya that a man who lived 5 centuries must pay a price no mortal man could conceive. There was a very good reason for his hardened exterior. A man like Garin had to wear some kind of protection against the world. But she wondered if he wore the same protection around his heart and mind. It would be impossible not to.
I'm no saint, Anya.
So, in the hands of a necromancer, the skull could do some wicked damage.
I don't want to begin to imagine. We need to get that skull.
I'll give Professor Danziger a call.